Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Chase Thomas podcast, where I'm still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, coming to you live from Knoxville, Tennessee. Both hosts on this very podcast, their football teams in college football, that is, are undefeated as of this recording. That means myself and the Tennessee Volunteers implied here, and also the Georgia Bulldogs and Matt Green, fellow University of North Georgia alumni. Matt Green's Georgia Bulldogs also moving to 1-0 on the weekend. Matt, good evening, sir. How are you?
Yes, sir. Good evening. It's a late one. A lot of college football we had this weekend, and we're still undone, I guess. We'll have Clemson, Georgia Tech tonight, I guess, if you're listening to this on a Monday. So, yeah, man, it was an awesome weekend for college football. Definitely a good weekend for my dogs.
Well, let's start off with the reason we're going super late tonight for this show, which will not be a weekly occurrence for both of our well-beings, is that we had Florida State and LSU absolutely lose their minds tonight. This is our instant reaction to kick things off here. Matt Green, what did you make of what happened in this one? Did we glean anything? Do we have any strong takeaways from either team coming out of it? I don't know. Like, that was a lot. LSU going 99 yards after Florida State fumbling on the one, the game almost coming down to a 10-second runoff because he didn't get out of bounds, and they wouldn't have had to worry about that if Brian Kelly didn't inexplicably let 30 seconds run off the clock when he had three timeouts after that fumble in the first down play. Like, there are all kinds of different things to pull from this one, but for you, instant reaction coming out of Florida State's victory to put them at 2-0 for the season, and Brian Kelly and the LSU Tigers moving to 0-1.
Well, there's so much to unpack from everything you said, but the first thing I want to say is the Buzz Killington crowd out there is going to tell you, oh, what a sloppy game we have. Neither team wanted to win. This was just terrible, terrible quality of football in this game. But the college football purist like I am, this is why we watch college football. Like, this game was incredible. It's like, this is why college football is superior to the NFL, because it's like we get NFL level athletes almost, but there's still some of that high school element that, like, the crazy things happen because these aren't professionals. And the fumble at the end, like, you didn't even need to really run a play, and they're tossing it on the goal line. Like, that's just craziness. Like, that doesn't happen in the NFL, like, plays like that. Like, so it was an incredible game. You said the clock management right there on defense there at the end was bad. I thought the clock management that was the worst was after they got, like, the second first down on that last drive, because they got a first down and then they're losing their second to last timeout. Like, you have to save those for the bad plays. And, like, it really could have cost them, because in the end, if things played out the way they should have, Florida State should win the game, right? Taylor, the freshman tight end there at the end, he did go out of bounds, or he did come down in bounds, and they're not going to be able to get another playoff in 1 second. So, like, poetic justice wise, Florida State should have come out and should have won the game right then and there. So, but then I feel like for the fan, and once everything stopped and they, like, were talking about what they're going to rule, it's like, just from a fan perspective, like, we got to decide this. Like, we can't just run the clock off and just be like, oh, you know, they wouldn't have gotten that last playoff, so it's game over. It's like, no, we've stopped it now. We're running one more play. This is for the game. Like, I thought it was incredible drama, man. 99 yards on the last drive.
I mean, that was preposterous. You mentioned a couple things there too. The Mike Norvell also calling the timeout to review whether or not he was in bounds was insanity, because blowing the timeout there by calling the timeout to challenge whether or not he was in bounds or out of bounds, that guaranteed an LSU play there. So if you don't call a timeout, it's like, hey, they're going to review it either way. The booth's going to look at that. Don't call the timeout, because if you don't call the timeout, And they look, it's just right then and there. If LSU's not set, I think Richard Johnson of Sports Illustrated had this tweet where he's like, if I'm LSU, I'm in stance no matter what this review does. Cause like, I don't know which way this is going. Like, we're ready in our offensive set immediately, because if it goes the wrong way, like the clock's just going to start immediately. Like, I don't think you can get the playoff with a second.
See, but I don't think Norvell does anything wrong in that situation, because on the field, the ruling is that he's out of bounds. So the clock is stopped and LSU is going to get that playoff with 1 second. But he challenges it. I feel like there is a chance. And like the referee commentator was saying on the broadcast, like there was discussion of like maybe the 10-second runoff or whatever. Because if you at least look at it, like there's a chance the refs might rule what we're saying is like, honestly, what the most just outcome would have been. Yeah, LSU came down in bounds. They're not going to get another playoff. It's game over. That really would have been the most fair thing. We would have felt robbed as an audience if they left it that way. So like, it almost feels like the ball doesn't lie, right? Like that FSU was able to block the field goal, the extra point after all of that, like just insanity.
I mean, we had a lot of crazy goal line stands over the weekend that we'll get to here on this podcast, because this was one of the best week ones of college football. But shout out to Mike Norvell and the Seminoles. That's a huge win. And like you said at the top, where people are going to say, oh, it's week one, and they're not going to give Florida State credit because LSU was mostly a mess. And I think LSU, this is going to be a problem. I think this is a bad football team right now. Like, they have a bunch of talent. Obviously, one of the worst targeting calls or worst targeting plays I've seen in a long time. Like, that's like
actual targeting.
Yeah,
for sure.
I think someone tweeted that, like, that's going to be shown in every official meeting for the next decade.
This is the one. This is the gold standard.
And it was nuts. But I mean, you look at that, it looks like Mason is out for probably a long time. It looked like that was a bad non-contact knee injury he suffered early in that one.
Celebrating on that tackle. Yeah, that was unfortunate.
Yeah, and you look at Noah Kane wasn't really a factor in this one. You look at Butte, who was not a factor for the majority of this game. And
no, that was the strangest thing to me, how he really did nothing in this game.
Well, Jayden Daniels was bad. Like, there were a lot of folks talking about it too that I thought was fascinating. A lot of ex quarterbacks talking about the plays that LSU was running was just scramble, where he just does not stay in the pocket. Florida State deserves a lot of credit for flustering him, but man, that guy, he did this at Arizona State all the time, where he will not stay in the pocket. That's just not his game. And I don't know. I don't think we're going to see Jayden Daniels be the quarterback throughout the rest of this season, but I think we'll see Garrett Nussmeier sooner rather than later, but not the offensive opening you wanted to see if you're an LSU fan to start off the Brian Kelly era. And I don't know. I think they're in for, I feel a lot better about Tennessee going to Death Valley in a month than I did coming into this one. But also, hey, great, huge, huge win for Mike Norvell and his program. Like, they needed that one so much. And Jordan Travis is a gamer, man. A lot of Jake Fromm in him is what I noticed. A lot of Jake Fromm, or it's just like
Jake Fromm, you think? I think he's a little more athletic than Jake Fromm.
I'm talking more of like the likability. No one actually wants him to be the quarterback because you're always trying to replace him. He's a 3-star kid from the state of Florida.
Jake Fromm was like a borderline 5-star.
He was a 4-star.
Jake Fromm was like the 30th ranked player in the country coming out of high school. I think Rivals or someone did have him as a 5-star. Like, Jake Fromm was super big time. Oh. And he was committed to Alabama before he's committed to Georgia. Like, Jake Fromm was, obviously people wanted Justin Fields. That was a whole thing. But I feel like Jake Fromm was a pretty highly touted guy in his own right.
Well,
he just had
Jordan Travis, the 25th best dual threat quarterback in his class back in the day from Florida. North Palm Beach, the Benjamin School. I think his brother is an MLB player. But either way, my broader point was not to get into the nitty gritty on the Jake Fromm comparison. It's just more of like, he's fine. Like, he was just somebody that you take for granted if you're a Seminole fan, where it's like, he's competent and he's a gamer. He's someone that you want to go to war with. And we'll see what happens. And Jordan Travis had a fantastic game. He had the Tim Tebow throw at one point, took a lot of shots in this one, had a lot of great balls. He had a couple touchdowns dropped that were just fantastic passes. Mookie was great in this one. They ran the ball really well. I was just impressed as a whole of what the Noles looked like. And I think there's reason for optimism that maybe this was a turning point for Florida State based on what we saw from the rest of the ACC this weekend, Matt Green. If you're looking around, suddenly if you're Florida State, you're like, the ACC might be wide open this year. Like, maybe we need to recalibrate what we think of Florida State, because ACC, we'll get into it, not the best week for that conference as a whole.
I don't know. It'll be maybe, stuttered there. It'll be remain to be seen, because like you said, LSU kind of looks like a bad football team right now. So I agree with what we saw from the ACC this year, this week. I think Florida State, you know, they're not, you know, just they don't have zero chance to win the conference, but I'd pump the brakes a little bit because we don't know how good this LSU team is. I had the same thought you mentioned, like Tennessee going into Baton Rouge in a few weeks. Doesn't seem quite as daunting after seeing this performance.
Well, a few housekeeping notes before we move on into our recap show, Matt Green, here on the Full Ride on the Chase Must podcast. As always, you can check us out on YouTube. Go subscribe on the YouTube channel, youtube.com/ChaseThomasPodcast. Like and subscribe as we continue growing out the YouTube page on that front. Check us out on our homepage, ChaseThomasPodcast.com. You can read all my sports writing over at SportsRenaissanceMan.substack.com. Type your name, I'll become a subscriber today. Follow Matt at Matt_Green. Follow myself at Chase_Thomas. Email this very program. Love to hear from you guys. At chasethomaspodcast@gmail.com. And of course, if you like this show, tell a friend, family member, coworker about the Full Ride here on the Chase Thomas podcast, and leave us a 5-star rating and a review if you're an Apple podcast or Spotify listener. It helps other people find the show, and it helps this very show continue to grow here on the Blue Wire Pod Network. Matt Green, it's time for your Green Line. It's back because college football is back. So I'm excited. The Green Line stat of the weekend. What do you got, man?
Green Line stat of the week. There's probably a lot of stats you could have chosen for the Georgia Bulldogs this weekend after absolutely pummeling the Oregon Ducks. But we're going to go with Georgia being the first team since Ohio State in 2020 versus Power 5 competition to score 7 touchdowns on their first 7 drives of the game. This offense was just absolutely dialed in. I want to say the 7th drive, they put them up, 49-3? That was like to start the 4th quarter or so. Like just absolute domination and from this Georgia offense this weekend.
We'll get into Georgia in a second, but my point, do you remember what I said about Georgia and Alabama last year about on this podcast?
What's that?
You got to take them off primetime. You got to take them off any kind of big schedule. They need to be on Jefferson Pilot Sports.
They do great ratings, though, man.
I don't understand it. Like, I was so mad at myself because I told the Sports Renaissance when we started that game, I was like, I'm going to hate myself for watching this game. Georgia's going to blow them out. Like, I had it deep in my gut where I'm like, this game's going to be over in the second quarter, and I'm going to sit here watching the whole game, taking notes on something that doesn't matter and is going to be over rather quickly. And lo and behold, the Dogs just kicked the living crap out of the Ducks. And I feel like the 3:30 spot, like, they don't belong there anymore. Play, you know what they need to do? A new challenge for Georgia, 8 a.m. on Saturday morning. That is the new challenge. Just put Georgia on 8 a.m., Alabama, 8 a.m. That's your new, like, hey, competition is like the only, we got to start leveling the playing field a little bit, especially when you have Kirby after the game being like, we just have better players. That is something that it basically just openly now Georgia can say. It's just that, like, we just are better all across the board.
And I feel like people, he's getting like kind of some pushback from that comment. And I didn't really understand the comment at all because it really seemed more like humbleness coming from Kirby Smart. Like, no, this isn't really about me being like better than Dan Lanning. Like, we just have better players. Like, it's just kind of that simple. Like, players are the ones who win your game. Like, Nick Saban, I feel like, is always the first to talk about, yeah, you can talk about the coaches and fans. Like, the players are the ones that are getting this done. And we have superior players.
There you go. Matt Green, before we get into
I have a second part of the green,
okay,
the Green Line stat of the week. Part two. Hopefully not one of the biggest regrets of my entire life. And Tori has already told me she's going to let me hear it forever if this comes to fruition. Stetson Bennett did not put a preseason. I did not put a futures Heisman bet in for Stetson Bennett. Mm-hmm. And I hope it's not one of the things I come to regret in my life. If you would have put a bet in for Stetson Bennett to win the Heisman, a $100 bet to win the Heisman on Friday, that would have paid out $12,500. If you were to place a $100 bet on Stetson Bennett today, you would only get $2,900. His Heisman line or odds just changed like overnight after that performance versus Oregon. So hopefully, you know, I want Stetson to win the Heisman as much as anybody. It's a great story. He's got all that going on for him. But it'll be one of my biggest regrets if it happens, because I talked about it all off season because no one was giving him any respect.
There's something insane about the gap between Herschel Walker to Stetson Bennett as Heisman winners for the Dogs. Like, there's something that makes me really unwell just thinking about that possibility.
Not all Heisman winners are built the same.
Well, we'll get into Georgia in a second because I have some other thoughts about that game, about that one. But before we do that, Matt Green, something tells me one of us picked the Noles to beat LSU. One of us picked Indiana to beat.
Oh my goodness.
Did I clean up this weekend? Because
you,
Matt Green, I had this feeling in my gut tonight where I was like, I am going to be able to just boast tonight on this podcast that after going 3-0 last weekend, I am building an amazing lead to start this college football season. Am I right here?
You are absolutely right about that one. The funny part is, if LSU had won this game, I would have actually beaten you against the spread. So we were tied before that last game. So me this weekend, we'll start with the bad news. 6-5 overall, winners and losers. 4-5-2 against the spread. Not winning you people money this week. But Chase Thomas over here, 5-4-2 against the spread. You know, that's okay. That's solid. But 10-1 overall, sir. That's just cleaning up. And Zeus's home dog of the week, Purdue, just narrowly 3.5-point dog, lost by 4. That was a tough one. Man, every game we got this weekend, like especially the ones that are all the only game of the day, like the Thursday and Friday and Sunday games, were all just incredible. Purdue, I really thought that they were going to get that done. But Penn State, they escaped right there at the end.
What was my one loss?
Your one loss? Oh, and we forgot on the podcast to pick the Ohio State Notre Dame game.
We both took Ohio State with the points. Yeah,
let me see. I'll have to figure out which one you lost. We'll have to come back to that.
That's driving me nuts because now I'm curious.
You picked Utah to win.
Did I?
Yeah.
No.
No, you didn't. That's my pick. No, you're good. You're good. I didn't want to do it on the air. I didn't want to just be put on the spot. You picked App State to win.
That's what it was. App State. And honestly, if you watch that game, folks, feel vindicated in that one. Feel a little vindicated.
Oh, man. That was a crazy one.
Oh, man. All right. Well, where do you want to start, Matt Green, from our list? We have a lot we can go here. Where do you want to start, though?
I feel like we got to start on Thursday night. Because that West Virginia-Pittsburgh game was incredible. Like, JT Daniels, man. I feel like I was right on JT Daniels. He's got the talent. And he was under pressure that whole game. Like, I feel like he was dropping some dimes. That interception, the pick six, while an amazing moment in the game. Oh, man, just so unfortunate for JT Daniels. Like, can we start giving wide receivers an interception column in the stats? Like, sometimes like this just shouldn't be on the quarterback. Like, I don't know. It's unfortunate to see that in his stats. But yeah, I felt like that was an incredible game. I thought West Virginia was going to get it done, but most importantly, I don't think mainstream college football was ready for the backyard brawl. Like, we're like, this is an NFL stadium. what, West Virginia, Pittsburgh, like they don't play for college football playoffs. They're not any like contenders or anything. That was an incredible atmosphere. Like we need that every year, West Virginia, Pittsburgh.
I agree. It was fantastic, and we can't say enough good things about the Backyard Brawl. It turns out, Matt Green, that not playing them on neutral sites and just having regional rivalries and playing those kind of games are good. It turns out that fans like them, TV likes them, and everybody involved likes them. I had to watch it late, super late that night because I was at UT Ball State that night. But yeah, I'm glad that is ultimately what happened there. It was a brutal way to lose. Obviously the tip ball, pick six, that was rough, for JT and company. But I think when you look at that too, my biggest takeaway is I feel it's funny because I think I flip now where I am far more concerned about Anthony Richardson and the Gators coming into Knoxville at the end of September than I am going on the road this week at Pitt. Pat Narduzzi has put his stamp back on this offense. They're running the football. They're trying to control the clock. They're not playing like West Virginia and what Graham Harrell and JT Daniels were doing. They were under center, man. They're back under center at Pittsburgh, sir. They are running the football. Keaton Slovis, take a seat, my friend. This is not your Kenny Pickett offense we saw a year ago. And I feel really, really good about that because if you play that style against UT next week with the tempo that UT's playing at right now and what they open with Ball State, which is faster than what they were last year, you're going to get blown out the building. So I feel really good about Pitt this weekend, and I appreciate Pitt going back to this style of offense because while it can beat West Virginia, they had better players. Shout out to Kirby Smart on that one. They're just... I am not the least bit concerned anymore going into Pittsburgh.
Not the least bit concerned about Pittsburgh.
I'm not.
See, that's interesting to me. What, with how much pressure they got JT Daniels, like I know they're not running the same offense as Tennessee necessarily, but I don't know. I think this Pitt defensive line, I think, looked really good. And, you know, they're a solid physical team. And I think that could be a good matchup next week. And like we said about the atmosphere, like that Pittsburgh, that Heinz Field, whatever they're calling it in 2022, that was a hostile environment for sure.
Heinz Field's what it's always going to be. I mean, the Johnny Majors Classic, man. I hope it sticks. It's a fun time.
What is it called now? Do you even know?
I don't.
It's some like corporate sponsor. I don't even know now.
Which is funny because it's like, well, Heinz Field is a corporate sponsor.
But I know, right?
It just doesn't feel like
that was my corporate spot. All right.
Where are we going next, Matt Green?
I guess we should stay on Thursday. The other one that was such a great game was Purdue, Penn State. Like Purdue was just in control of this game late. And there's so much second guessing I saw on Twitter of them passing with like 3 minutes to go in the game with the lead. But I think it shows that they were correct to try to keep the foot on the gas, because the last time Penn State got the ball, they drove right down the field. Like, what did they get the ball back with like a minute 45 and they scored in like 45 seconds. Like it took them almost no time at all to drive down there. So I was obviously disappointed. I picked Purdue. I thought there was a chance. Obviously there still is a chance for them to win the Big Ten West, but there was a chance that if they won that Penn State game that, you know, they could have started 8-9-0. So I think Purdue still looks like a solid team, but Penn State, I thought this was a big time victory, like going on the road, like hostile environment to open the season. Like teams just aren't full stride coming out week one. So if you have a conference game that matters week one in a road environment like that, like it doesn't really matter who the opponent is. Like that's a big time win.
It was interesting too. Like Pitt did a really good job controlling all the different backs. Like Penn State rotated Allen, Lee, and Singleton, and they all 3 yards to carry, 3 yards to carry, 2 yards to carry. And Clifford, man, was just not good. He completed barely 50% of his passes, 20 for 37, 282, 7.6 yards per attempt. He had 4 TDs, a pick, 75.4 QBR. But if you're a Pitt fan or a Penn State, you, goes to LSU in. That's not looking like the best decision for Kane. Maybe he should have stayed in Happy Valley for one more year with Clifford and company. But you look at that offense, what we saw, I don't know. It was a survive and advance game. But if you're a Penn State fan, Matt Green, should he still be the guy? Did you see enough from the four Drew Aller passes, the five-star kid, freshman who's right behind him? Do you think there is a possibility we see him sooner rather than later, or do you think Clifford was fine as all?
Yeah, like, I'm not a huge Clifford guy, but I honestly, I'm glad you asked that, because I felt like when Drew Aller came in, I'm not sure.
I think it's Aller, but I could be wrong.
I felt like their offense seemed kind of out of whack for like the next three or four drives after that. Like, it just seemed like it threw him off, and I'm not sure if he was hurt, or I think there's speculation that he may have just been in the bathroom. I don't know, for the start of the third quarter, but I felt like their whole offense kind of seemed that seemed like that gave Purdue to get a chance back in the game after that series. And it didn't really make any sense. And then Clifford, I mean, he seems like one of those guys that's just under just the most pressure nationally. Like, everyone's just ready to say he sucks and things like that. So I feel like ultimately, like, when leading that game winning drive the way he did, like, I don't see any chance that he's not the starter moving forward.
It is funny. Did you hear what Joel Klatt said about Clifford during this game?
I don't remember what
he said. Quote, and this is from Redshirt Freshman on Twitter. He said, quote, if you're a veteran QB in college football, it probably means you haven't been good enough to leave.
Oh, man, that's honestly true. That's, I feel like, how it is. That's 100% true in college basketball. It's like if you're a junior or senior, it's probably because they don't think you can play in the NBA.
Yeah.
But yeah, honestly, in 2022, there's a lot of truth to that.
Where are we going next, Matt Green?
What are your thoughts? What do you have on your sheet? What's this next?
Here,
one
I'll give a few seconds on Tennessee here.
Okay,
Tennessee, Ball State. Tennessee obviously blows them out. It's been so long now. I think it's 59-14 final, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct, Matt Green? I don't have it in front of me. What do we end up winning by? 59-10, excuse me. And Tennessee, very, very vanilla. Very, very vanilla. Very different than what we saw a year ago opening against Bowling Green with Joe Milton at quarterback in the opener. But Joe Milton looked fantastic in his time in the second half. I don't know. I can't quit Joe Milton and the upside there going into next year, but we'll see. Jalen Wright is healthy and just going to be a yak machine. Very excited to see what he does with this offense. 13 carries, 88 yards, TD. Hendon was a little bit off. I mean, he was still 18-25, 221, 8.8 yards per attempt. But it wasn't great. Like, Hendon was not his normal Hendon self. He was fine. He was efficient, did what he needed to do. Heupel spoke glowingly of him. But the main thing, Brew McCoy, going to be a dude out wide. He's huge. A lot of Juwan Jennings comparisons. He's even wearing the same number at 15 out wide, but he is just long. Tennessee is going to have just a lot of fun with Cedric Tillman and Brew McCoy out wide. They're just huge. They're just going to be bigger than most corners they're going up against, and they're going to have a lot of go jump ball opportunities. And Jalen Hyatt, first play of the game, offensive play of the game, he gets in the end zone. He's in the slot now, and he's just a track star, and they're just deeper at receiver. Tennessee's going to play more receivers, and that's going to be fun. But still, not a lot of pressure from the defense. I think that's still a big concern the rest of the way. But tempo's faster. The offense can sleepwalk to 59 points is the main thing. Is that if you thought Tennessee was playing fast and you thought the offense was good last year, I think this is going to finish in the top five in offensive efficiency going into this year. And I think that matters, and we'll see how many wins that accumulates. But Tennessee looked just they understand this offense. Everybody knows what they're doing, and they just have more depth than a year ago.
Yeah, I don't have much to add on this Tennessee game. You pretty much said it all. I'm excited for Tennessee Pittsburgh. Especially I'm surprised to hear you say you're not the least bit concerned, given the Pitt Panthers some bulletin board material there.
It is, but like, Matt, I look at it as this Pitt team is not, now they are not a team that I think is going to be able to play from behind very well. Like, I don't think the way this offense wants to run when Tennessee's up 24-0 after the first quarter, I just don't know if Pitt's going to have the offensive firepower and just kind of mindset that they had a year ago with Mark Whipple and Kenny Pickett. Tennessee's going to jump on you. There's just no way around Tennessee dominating you in the first quarter. Everybody feels it every week. It hasn't stopped in the hype layer. It's like, it's just not going to stop. So we're
first quarter champions.
They are. They're the best first quarter offense in America. And I think some teams can handle it. Some teams cannot. And I don't know if this Pitt offense can. Last year they could, because Pitt was a explosive, one of the best offenses there. I think had a top 10 offense last year in scoring. And that's just not the Pitt team that we're going to see this year. Good team, but I don't think they can hang with the tempo monsters here in Knoxville.
We shall see. We'll save that for the Wednesday show. But I think
let's go to Notre Dame.
Game of the week. Yeah, Notre Dame, Ohio State. I'm a little concerned with my Ohio State national championship pick, I would say, after week one. Like, I think Notre Dame, I feel like perennially, it's funny how I think you're hearing more and more people kind of give them respect. You're kind of hearing that narrative more and more, but I think they're kind of perennially one of the most underrated teams, it feels like. Like, oh, Notre Dame's coming in, we're going to smash them. Oh, they lose every big game they play in, whatever, yada, yada. You know what I mean? They just seem like such a popular team to hate on these days. And they just come in, like, think about the way they play Bama. The way Bama has played a lot of teams in the college football playoff, like, they smoke just about everybody they play. Notre Dame kept it close, right? Both times they played Georgia in Notre Dame and in Athens, close games down to the final possession. Like, they're a good quality team. And Ohio State, like, everyone, this is a 17-point line. Like, everyone's picking Ohio State to just dominate this game. And Notre Dame just kind of, it feels like they make you play their brand of football. And so I got to give some credit to Notre Dame for being a little better than we thought. But after seeing Jackson Smith and Jigba go down, like, for that to hurt this offense the way it did, like, that's not really what we're used to with Ohio State. It's just like they're loaded with playmakers. It's next man up. Like, they could lose two quarterbacks and still win the national championship. Like, it doesn't even matter. Like, Ohio State's just always that loaded. I was disappointed with how they didn't just feed Travion Henderson. I feel like Travion Henderson is the best running back in college football. Like, this man needs more than 15 carries, zero receptions too. Like, you got to throw give this man the ball. Just give him touches because he's that dangerous. And I think he's the kind of guy, there's not many of those workhorses out there anymore. And I feel like he is one of those. And I was disappointed that he had 15 for 91. Like, I think he just should have gotten fed the rock a lot more.
That's fair. I also wonder, do you look at it as a positive that Ohio State showed that they could win a game like this early? Do you think that this, because you mentioned that this made you a little bit more worried and concerned about the national title pick, but does it actually give you more, could it give you more confidence if you're an Ohio State fan or an Ohio State better? Because Ohio State, the biggest thing last year was not whether or not they could score enough to win a national title. It was whether or not they could play defense well enough. And Jim Knowles, I think night one, did a great job. Like, if you look at the difference with this Ohio State team this year, they didn't give up any chunk plays. There were really no big plays in this game. It was just a bend, don't break type of deal. They shut out Notre Dame in the second half. We should mention that. 0 points for the Fighting Irish in the second half. This is not the defense that we have been accustomed to the last couple of years in Columbus. And I think that is the big thing. I guess those are my two big takeaways from this one, is that Ohio State's defense, I think, is legit and has cleaned up a lot of stuff from the last couple of years. So I think Jim Knowles is going to be a good thing. Like, Notre Dame could not run on them. Tyler Buchner had nothing deep. There was no explosive plays from this Notre Dame offense. And I think Ohio State deserves a lot of credit for that. But also, CJ Stroud just doesn't make bad decisions. Like, he doesn't throw picks. He doesn't really scramble and just do dumb stuff. Like, he doesn't fumble. He doesn't turn the ball over. He's a very stationary quarterback, and that's, like, kind of frustrating if you're an Ohio State fan, where he just refused to scramble and break what he needs to do. Like, when Jackson Smith and Jigba and company go out, like, hey, man, we need you to do more, because this more is on your plate right now. And, like, a Justin Fields or a Bryce Young or even Stetson Bennett or guys like that, when stuff breaks down, at that point, they're like, all right, we need to make a play. We need to do other stuff. CJ didn't really show that, but he also can still grow, and he doesn't kill you when things are bad. Like, he doesn't seem phased, and he can just be, he's very calming in the storm and just was fine. I think CJ Stroud is just fine, and I feel a lot better about them this year than I did a year ago, because that defense, I think, is going to be one of the nation's best.
I think that's a fair point. This Notre Dame defense could turn out to be one of the best they play, maybe the best they play the entire season, and they're still able to score 21 points. I guess part of my national championship pick, you got to have a good defense and a good offense to win it all. But part of it was thinking that this Ohio State offense was going to be head and shoulders the best offense in college football this year, and they could just drop 40 on anyone they play. Mm-hmm. And so this makes me worry a little bit that, you know, Smith and Jigba going out can kind of derail the offense the way it did. But you're absolutely right. Like, if the defense, and we don't know how good this Notre Dame offense necessarily is. Like, you know, Tyler Buckner, he was running around making some plays there, but the offense just didn't really move the ball when it mattered the most, and couldn't get in the end zone for the most part. So you make a valid point. Like, this could be a much improved Ohio State defense, and I think it should be a much improved Ohio State defense, and they're definitely still one of the top two or three contenders out there.
Notre Dame starts off 121st though in first downs per game, 12 total first downs in this one. Ohio State did work on that front, so we'll see if that's a Notre Dame problem for the next couple weeks, or is that an Ohio State has made the leap. And I'm gonna mention, exactly, I have to mention this one, Matt Green, because this is some real sicko stuff. But Iowa 7, South Dakota State 3. Brian Ferentz, son of Kirk Ferentz, the head coach. I think we talked about it on the podcast, Matt Green. This is why I couldn't do anything on Iowa this offseason, where you were in on it. You were like, well, it's Iowa. They'll bounce back. They'll do enough. They should still contend in the Big Ten West. I don't want them to contend in the Big Ten West. This is a disgrace, what we saw on Saturday against the Jackrabbits. And no shots fired against the Jackrabbits. There were 10 total first downs for the Hawkeyes at home against the Jackrabbits. There's bad, Matt Green. And then there is whatever we just saw on Saturday. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say I watched every single snap, but I watched the clips. I watched what I needed to. It is ridiculous.
You've seen enough.
I cannot believe they did that to their fans. Like, the Iowa fans, we love you guys. Iowa, beautiful place to play. Love to go to a game in Hawkeye country. Goodness gracious. Brian Ferentz cannot continue to be your offensive coordinator. Kirk Ferentz, you have to evolve. We're not saying you have to run the air raid, man. We're not saying you have to just completely just revamp your offense and run whatever Coastal's running week in, week out. You don't have to become UNC where it's all gas, no defense, but you have to do something else. This cannot happen. A team that was just in the Big Ten title game a year ago, 10 total first downs at home.
And I bet if you're a listener out there that did not watch this game, you're thinking, well, Chase, you're being a little hard on the Hawkeyes. They did put together one touchdown drive. Not so fast, my friend. I'm going to read the scoring, the each drive-by-drive in this play or in this game for the entire game. Mm. We got punt, punt, missed field goal, punt, 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 field goal, Iowa, punt, 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 interception, Iowa, field goal, or Iowa threw an interception, field goal, South Dakota State, end of half, punt, 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 safety, then Iowa had a fumble, punt, 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 another safety, punt, turnover on downs in the game. So Iowa did not put together one touchdown drive. They kicked one field goal and got two safeties to have 7 points. Unbelievable. That's just Big Ten football right there.
What in the world is that, Matt Green? What in the world is that? Like, Spencer Petras' final line in this one, 11 for 25, 109 yards, 4.4 yards per attempt, no TDs, one interception. He had a 1.1 quarterback rating. 1.1, Matt Green. What are we doing?
Unbelievable.
What are we doing in Iowa City?
286 total yards combined of offense in this game. 286. Never seen anything like this game. I saw a meme. I wish I would give credit to it if I knew who it was. But they said these two things are the same sport and showed South Dakota State, Iowa, side by side with North Carolina App State, 63-61. Just absolutely absurd. That's why I gotta love carries, college football.
36 carries for 57 yards for the Hawkeyes. The Jackrabbits, 31 carries for 33 yards.
That's tough. This is not North Dakota State. This is South Dakota State.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. The noted basketball juggernauts, South Dakota State Jackrabbits. This is not their sport up there in South Dakota. Matt Green, where are we going next? I can't talk about the Hawkeyes anymore.
I think the biggest performance of the weekend has to be the Georgia Bulldogs, right? Mm. Like, just with the question of, you know, what were they going to be, losing 15 guys to the NFL draft, all of that. And to absolutely dismantle Oregon 49-3, for this thing to just never even be close. Like Bo Nix, what are you doing, man? Like, just go to any school on the West Coast that doesn't have Georgia on the schedule. Like, man, this was just an absolute beatdown. I think this is what I said on the podcast leading into this game, that this Georgia offense just has so many playmakers, and you can see Todd Monken's genius at work now. Like, they're just loaded, you know, with running backs, receivers, tight ends, just all of them. Like, I think Kenny McIntosh had about 18 yards rushing in this game and had about 120 yards receiving. Like, you could just like Justin Flo and Noah Sewell were like the biggest storyline of this Oregon defense. And I'm honestly not sure they made a play the entire game. I know Justin Flo had the roughing the passer on Stetson Bennett, which personally I thought was questionable. Like, it's not the worst call I've ever seen on a quarterback for a late hit, but like, if you're hitting the quarterback simultaneously when he's throwing, like, I don't know how it can be roughing the passer, but like, you just saw Georgia just absolutely abused the matchups. Like, Ladd McConkey is a legit playmaker in this offense. Darnell Washington, like, Brock Bowers is the best player on this offense a year ago. They score 49 points, and I think he had two catches for about 30 yards. Like, they're just so loaded. And Stetson Bennett looked as good as I think we've ever seen him look.
Couple things here, though. And I think this is a fair question. Did any quarterback in football have more time to throw over the weekend than Stetson Bennett?
Oh, I think you're absolutely right. I think there's a valid point to that. Georgia's offensive line, this might be one of the best offensive lines in college football this year.
I think it's the best. Like, they crushed Oregon's defensive line. That was the big part of the game to me, is that people talk about Stetson, and a lot of it was because of that Heisman type play where he ran around, avoided the sack, and then found Ladd McConkey by himself in the end zone. It felt like a Heisman moment type thing. But I think Georgia fans are now getting so defensive about Stetson, where if you mention, and this was something I mentioned in the family, where I'm like, I was taking notes. I want a stat of like how much time, which quarterback had the most amount of time per drop back to throw. And I mean, this is not a slight at Stetson. This is not something Stetson can control. But generally speaking, quarterbacks are significantly better when they have a clean pocket over and over again. There are quarterbacks, you look at the numbers, their quarterback grading with a clean pocket versus not, and a lot of it can make or break a quarterback. This is an advantage for Georgia. This is not a slight against Stetson Bennett. This is a reason that they are going to pulverize everybody else in their wake this year. But if you're going to throw the Stets, part of the difference between Bryce Young and Stetson Bennett is that Alabama offensive line sucked last year. The reason that Bryce Young won the Heisman was because Bryce was having to improvise a bunch last year. He was having to run for his life a bunch. There's a reason Doug Marrone is not the offensive line coach at Alabama anymore. It is the Kentucky offensive line coach that Saban brought in. This is not a shot against Stetson Bennett, but
it's a It's a slight on Stetson Bennett, though. No one's ever saying this at Webb about Tua, though, right? Like, no one's saying, yeah, but Tua's got offensive line and these great receivers. Like, it's just like, oh my God, you see Tua? This guy's incredible. So there is it is a slight to an extent. It's just about keeping the same energy with Stetson that you do with everybody else.
Well, I'm saying, too, he was efficient. Like, Stetson was great. Like, two things can be true. Stetson was great, and he's one of the best quarterbacks in college football. Stetson also benefited, and I think people can overreact about what you saw from Stetson on Saturday in particular, where it's just when you have that kind of time, that matters. And a lot of it was yak stuff. Like, Ladd McConkey was doing stuff after the catch. Darnell Washington was doing stuff after the catch. Brock Bowers was doing stuff. You mentioned McIntosh in the flat. So those were guys doing what they needed to do.
Yeah, so many screens. And I think that's when you know you're just better than somebody, because you're just like, we don't really need to run a play. We don't need to design something to get someone open. We're just going to throw it to him. We're going to block your guys, and we're going to break tackles. Like, it seemed just so simple. Like, so no, there's definitely a lot of short stuff that was thrown, but I think he was also like 5 of 7. I don't know how many yards, a couple of touchdowns throwing downfield as well. So I thought that the throw he had to A.D. Mitchell, the back shoulder touchdown, it was just such a sharp, like, crisp passing catch. It's just, that was what you didn't really see with Stetson Bennett. It was like so many of the plays he made were kind of improv plays, kind of running around, finding somebody, leaning on the run game a lot last year. Like, the actual passing game just looked just way, way better timed. Everything just looked sharper. It looked crisper. I think he threw like 5-6 incompletions in the game, and I think 2 or 3 of those were him throwing the ball away. So I mean, the offense was just looked so good. A lot of short stuff, but you know, I mean, that's college football, right? That's how you run an offense. You just be efficient. It was 368 yards passing. It was the most since Aaron Murray in 2013 against Auburn. The prayer at Jordan-Hare game. He threw over 400 yards. But yeah, so Stetson, for all the Georgia fans that hated on Stetson, like, this, it could be an overreaction to just week one, but I think we all know Oregon is, if nothing else, a solid football team. Maybe one of the two or three best on Georgia's schedule. Time will remain to tell on that. But for all the Georgia fans that hated on Stetson, like, if he has a couple more performances like this, his name's going to be at the top of the UGA record books on several stats. I think he's set for a pretty good year this year.
Jalen Carter was sensational in this one. You look at him just causing absolute havoc. But, and this was an interesting stat, Rob Mosley, Oregon Ducks writer, he said, he tweeted this after the game. That said, the last three times Oregon lost its opener, 2009, 2011, 2019, the Ducks finished the year at the Rose Bowl. So maybe something to put in the back of your mind for freaking out about week one craziness. I will say, too, and this is something that I think was overlooked a little bit, because a lot of this was Oregon's defense did not have the players to stop and match up with this offensive line, with the skilled players out wide. Like, Ladd McConkey was just running circles around these dudes. And you were able to put in Kendall Milton, who has beefed up. He's a jacked dude now. Like, he is significantly stronger than I remember him when he first burst on the scene a couple of years ago. But Oregon drove several times. Like, Georgia, it wasn't like Bo Nix was struggling to move the ball early on in this one. Like, that's something that I think is going to be overlooked, that Oregon had over 300 yards of offense in this one. They ran 5 yards to carry against Georgia as a whole. That was something that I think is going to be overlooked a little bit, because Bo Nix had some really awful picks and just did some really backbreaking stuff in this one. But they were able to move the ball. I think you're going to be able to run on this team a little bit this year. This defense is still elite. Georgia's defense is still elite. I mean, Malachi Starks, as a true freshman, led the team in tackles in the opener. That's pretty wild. The 5-star athlete Jefferson? I think he's from Jefferson, right?
He is indeed. Yeah. Mikael Williams from Columbus. Yeah. He got the start in this game, true freshman. And Malachi Starks, yeah, I think he might solidify that safety spot as well.
Crazy and pick in this one.
Without a doubt. And I think Georgia, just based on what they had coming back, so many question marks, but you're like, you know, the way Georgia recruits and Kirby, they most likely will still have a lot of players. And I don't even think that was accounting for any freshmen coming in and contributing right away. And so if you got two true freshmen coming in and, you know, making plays on this defense, like, they might not be as good as 2021, but they also don't have to play the 2021 team. So this could still be the best defense in college football. And I don't know if I would agree with you that they necessarily drove the ball that much. A lot of their drives ended in punts.
How many yards, though? Like, I could pull up their drive by drive, because, like, if you look, they got first down on that first drive.
One of the interceptions came pretty late, pretty deep in Georgia territory. The Chris Smith interception.
Yeah. I guess I'd have to go back a little bit and go.
And then they also just pulled the 2021 classic that Georgia did every single game last year. Someone puts together a 8-minute drive, 15 play drive to try to score a garbage time touchdown there in the fourth quarter. Like, and this was one of the times they were able to keep him out of the end zone. But yeah, I mean, this defense, Will Anderson has talked about, like, he's just above and beyond the best defensive player in college football. Like, I don't think those people know who Jalen Carter is. Like, Will Anderson is not on another level than Jalen Carter. Like, they play different positions, but Jalen Carter, I think, is equally as dominant. Like, he might be the best player in college football, in my opinion. Like, he could be the number one pick in the draft. He's just an absolute, you know, one man wrecking crew on the defensive line.
For sure. For sure. Matt Green, where are we going next?
I think the biggest, the next biggest, like, kind of statement win, I think, kind of over the weekend, unless I'm overlooking someone, obviously Ohio State beating Notre Dame was a good win, but Florida beating Utah, I think, was massive, just from a psychological standpoint. Like, we don't know how good Utah is. We don't know how good the Pac-12 is. The best team in the Pac-12, you know, might be a 3 or 4 loss team. Like, who really knows? But it simply doesn't matter for Florida. Like, the number 7 ranked team came into your building, brand new regime, like, first game, to be able to come away with a win. It's just, like, obviously this team has a lot to work on, but to be able to come away with a win is just, it was a massive win. Like, Anthony Richardson, I thought his performance this weekend was great. Like, he still needs to improve as a passer, but, you know, we've seen guys in college football that needed to improve as passers that were still damn good college football players, because the running game, the quarterback running is a huge aspect to college football offenses. So I think some criticism is needed of Utah for how you're not going to have a spy on this guy every single play. Like, once he took off, it seemed like every time he took off, there's no one there, and he'd get 20, 30 yards out of it. So I not staying away from Anthony Richardson. He's a dynamic athlete. And that one play he made around the goal line, breaking the tackle and throwing the touchdown, I thought this was just a massive win for Florida.
I mean, Anthony Richardson, 3 TDs total in this one. He was sensational. I thought he was top notch, 17 and 24, 168, 7.0 yards per attempt. But he had 11 carries, 106 yards. He averaged 10 yards a carry. Montrell Johnson, the transfer from Louisiana, 12 carries, 75 yards, 6.3. You look at it totally, 39 carries in the night for the Florida Gators in the ground, 283 yards, 7.3 yards per attempt, 4 TDs. All no passing touchdowns in this one. They just Kyle Whittingham, a tough, tough Utah defense, and they ran right through him. Like, they really pulverized him. They never quit on this one. Like, this was something where, I mean, this was a hard fought win, and Utah deserves a lot of credit for fighting. And, like, even after that late score by Florida and Anthony Richardson, that they drove right back down the field and should have won this game. Like, this was one of those, they got away with the almost pick at midfield by the Florida linebacker who dropped it right in his hands. And then obviously they get down further and they're just trying to figure out what to do. And they're in the gun. They're they're going for the score. They're going for the win. And you and I were texting about this at the time, but I would have just kneeled it. I didn't understand the logic there. Just get in the middle of the field, kick the field goal. you're in the swamp, man. Pac-12 football has not gone in and won SEC games very often. It's been a long time. They've won one on the road. They beat UCLA, beat LSU last year or 2 years ago, whatever it was, at home. But on the road in hostile territory, man, you go to overtime. You see what happens in overtime against this new coaching staff, and it puts some pressure on them in the swamp. I didn't like the call.
I'm going to have to respectfully disagree, sir. I think that goes against the classic coaching philosophy. At home, you go for the tie. On the road, you go for the win because you just want to get out of there. You got a chance to win the game. You win the game now. You get out of there.
How did that work for App State?
They were at home. They went for the tie or for the win.
No, they went for the two. They went for the one at home.
No, I'm saying the first time they scored before the onside kick, they went for two.
Yes, and they shouldn't have.
To do it for the win. Yeah. I'm saying they should have tied. They were at home. They were supposed to go for the tie. On the road,
I think you should just always go for the tie. I don't know, man.
I think if you think you're the better team, you can go for the tie. I think if you don't think you're the better team, classically, I would go for the win because you're like, you know, we don't know if we play this out for longer, if we're really better than these guys, but right now we have a shot to win. But they had first and goal on the 6 yard line with 22 seconds left. That's a game you can win. You can't, like, you have to make a good decision. Like, you tell the quarterback, like, don't force anything into coverage, but you go for the win in that situation. Like, I don't see any scenario where you can just have first and goal with 22 seconds, first and goal. That's easily enough time to run three plays, three shots at the end zone. If you don't get it, kick a field goal, go to overtime. You got to tell your quarterback, you can't force anything into coverage. And he forced it into double coverage and it was picked off.
That's fair. That's fair. Would you like to guess who's number one in first downs after this weekend?
Is it Florida?
It's North Carolina.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
North Carolina. I think they're going to win this one, this battle here through two games. Matt Green,
Let's talk about the Tar Heels.
Last thing on Florida. This is a Florida-Utah thing. Does this loss, though, kick Utah out of the college football playoff conversation? If they still run the gauntlet, they get back in the Pac-12 schedule and they go 11-1, let's say, and then beat Oregon or USC in the Pac-12 title game.
Like, just definitively, no, it doesn't eliminate them, but I mean, it's not likely now because that was one of those things. Like, it didn't matter how good Florida was in the season opener. Like, that's a good win going into the swamp, like traveling across the country. It doesn't matter if this Florida team goes 7-5, 6-6, that would have still been a good win. And like, who knows, maybe they go 8-4, 9-3. And it's kind of a Cincinnati Notre Dame situation from last year, and they're actually a good team and they're kind of propping you up the whole way. I just don't think with what Utah's resume is going to be, it's going to take so much help. Like my original prediction, this doesn't necessarily keep them out, because my original prediction was a 2-loss Big 12 champion and a 2-loss ACC champion this season. So that can still, if they run the table, go 11-1, 12-1 with a Pac-12 championship, they can still win it, but they're just definitely not going to get the benefit of the doubt over any other 1-loss team, in my opinion, because I think we both don't see this Florida team being really a top 25 team this season. So I mean, they could be, but I think 8-4 is, this Florida team goes 8-4. Are they ranked? Like, maybe like a borderline, maybe not. They're not a top 15 team, most likely. Like, they might be ranked, but we just don't really know how good this team is. So if that's the 1-loss, when you're comparing it to a 1-loss Baylor or a 1-loss Clemson or a 1-loss, you know, someone coming out of the ACC, that sort of thing, Oklahoma, they're going to be, or if it's like a Notre Dame, their 1-loss is Ohio State at the end of the year. If Georgia's 1-loss is to Alabama, like, they're not going to get the benefit of the doubt in any of those 1-loss tiebreakers, in my opinion. So it's not over for them, but it definitely took a shot, because I felt like this Florida win, it's kind of like a moment, you know, like, we beat an SEC school. We went down south and beat an SEC school. Like, we challenged ourselves to play this tough of a game and we won. I feel like that was going to kind of you know, subconsciously affect the voters that, yeah, this Utah team is for real. We want everyone always kind of has that bias. Like we talk about, it's like a East Coast bias, but ultimately the bias is really at the end of the day to try to get the biggest part of the country involved. And if you can make an argument that a team from the West Coast is in the top four, the playoff wants to give those conference champions the benefit of the doubt more times than not. But usually there isn't a legitimate argument to be had for the Pac-12 champion.
Yeah, we'll see. Florida, though, if you're a Florida fan, you're feeling pretty good. And especially with Kentucky, their favorite going to the Kentucky game this weekend. No Chris Rodriguez in this one. And we saw Kentucky struggle in that first half against the Miami Redhawks. And Will Levis, and let me just say, Spencer Rattler, who was not good this weekend in the opener either. Will Levis, not good. This is something that Georgia fans and Tennessee fans can come together on. Are you ready for me to bring the two together, Matt Green?
What's that?
Hendon Hooker and Stetson Bennett are like the quarterbacks who deserve the weekly praise, and like they are clearly better college quarterbacks right now than Will Levis and Spencer Rattler. They are clearly better players. So when you throw in the Heisman stuff and like these lists, and they're Spencer and Will are just like the what ifs, like the NFL types, where it's like if we put him in the right system, he has the arm talent, he has this, that, and the other. He has the look of an NFL quarterback. Hendon Hooker is not going to be an NFL starting quarterback for 15 years. Like Stetson Bennett's not going to be an NFL quarterback. But these two guys are so efficient and so good at their craft now in great systems that they know everything ins and outs and are both going to put in top 10 offenses this year. They are what everyone in the national media keeps hoping and trying to turn Spencer and Will into. It's not happening. These two, it's not going to happen. Give that love to Stetson Bennett and Hendon Hooker because they are the actual on the field production that you're looking for week over week with Spencer Rattler and Will Levis.
So are you going to include Anthony Richardson in that group, or is this a Venn diagram and maybe Anthony Richardson's in that middle group, kind of the overlap?
No, because Richardson might go number one in the draft next year.
But I'm saying for all of the kind of draft hype he's gotten, he's not even close to showing that at the college level. But I think he's the one that I feel like his ceiling feels more unknown to me than Rattler or Will Levis. Like I feel like more confident in saying they're not as good as I thought that people claim they are. Whereas Anthony Richardson's kind of in that medium space. Like he could, like the tools are there. We see what people see, but he hasn't necessarily done it yet. I can't rule out him doing it yet.
I mean, there's a lot of Cam stuff there. When you watch that game, there was a lot of Cam Newton stuff there.
Why we got to do it? Why we got to do the Cam Newton thing?
Richardson, I mean, he's going to be a player, man. And of the three, I would say Richardson, if I had to pick over the course of the year, who I'm betting on, Richardson, Spencer Rattler, or Will Levis, give me Richardson every single time. More embarrassing, Matt Green, UNC barely surviving against App State on the road, or NC State winning because East Carolina college kickered it and missed the extra point to send it to overtime.
I was shocked by this phrasing on your outline here, sir. This isn't even close. NC State is by far more embarrassing. Like by the time of kickoff, App State was favored to win the game without the star receiver, Josh Downs. Like I even came to you or texted you at like 11:30 or something on Saturday. Like, is it too late to change my App State UNC pick? Because everything was looking towards App State at that point. But for NC State, like, and also UNC, what's their over under coming on this year? What, 6.5, 7.5? Like NC State is a team, a dark horse playoff contender. And we're beating East Carolina by 1 point after they miss a 28 yard field goal or whatever that was to end the game there at the end. Like NC State, I'm not sure how they can, like East Carolina, I feel like does this to teams, right? It seems like they're kind of one of these chaotic teams that can be dangerous when the ACC teams come to town. But I don't know. You got to survive in advance. But if anyone should like feel worse about their team after this weekend, it's 100% NC State.
Devin Leary said after the game, quote, "They came in and humbled us a little bit, but that's something in the long run you might look back and say that we needed." Did you really need that going into East Carolina? Did you need to be humbled on the road against the Pirates? Is that week one? What have you won? Where is this confidence? You have not been in the Big 12, the ACC title game yet. What are we talking about? Humbled? You're not Clemson.
That's fair, but no, that's fair though. There's a lot of preseason hype around NC State, and guys can start to read their own press clippings, as they say. So maybe ultimately it is learning experience. I don't know if it was Sam Pittman or someone who said it this weekend, but a learning experience following a W is a lot better than a learning experience following a loss. So, you know, maybe this was enough to get NC State focused and get them to play at their potential moving forward.
How much longer is Gene Chizik going to be the DC at North Carolina?
That's a good question. Not the best performance. And when was he the DC last? Was that under the guy Fedora? Was that when he was 2016 or so?
Yeah, Larry Fedora. That's
right.
And
that didn't go well that time either. So yeah, we'll see what happens with Chizik in North Carolina.
I mean, just what are we doing, North Carolina, man? And I wonder too, like Jay Bateman, I think is his name, the longtime DC at Army who went to Chapel Hill with Mac Brown. Didn't work out for him. They're giving up 42.5 points per game through 2 weeks, Matt Green. I just, I don't know. It's entertaining to watch. It's entertaining to watch. And do you know what's great? Where they're right next to right now. And it tells me, Matt Green, that nature is healing, because the Oklahoma State Cowboys find themselves at 114th in scoring defense, giving up 44 this weekend. So I would like to personally say
that the Chippewas.
Yes, that was the Chippewas. Jim McElwain putting it on him. We'll say Derek Mason. Shout out to you, Derek Mason, for going to Oklahoma State, imploding that Jim Knowles defense from the inside to bring back the kind of Cowboy football that you and I grew up with, Mac Green. For that offense to be good, what we saw last year, that Oklahoma State team, yeah, that was cool. Defense first. They almost went to the college football playoff. That was nice. That's not the Oklahoma State football I want to watch. I want to watch the gunslinging all over the place. 52.
Zach Robinson.
Yes.
Des Bryant.
That's what we want. So Derek Mason, shout out to you. I hope it continues week over week. Give him a lifetime contract, because Stillwater got fun again. Does that mean they're just going to have a rough year? Probably 8-4, 9-3. Yeah, but that feels right. It feels like home. Feels like the kind of nostalgia that I like. A bad Oklahoma State defense with an electric Oklahoma State offense that is must see week over week. So Oklahoma State, North Carolina, a lot of fun this year.
McElwain's got a solid pedigree when it comes to coaching offense. So, you know, these early season games, you don't want to overreact too much. Sometimes these teams do just survive a scare week one, and they can bounce back and have a better season. So we'll see. I won't rule out the Cowboys from being Big 12 contenders just yet.
Speaking of contenders, Matt Green, Haynes King, did you watch this?
I watched very little of the Sam Houston State game that they played this weekend.
I went back and watched every Haynes King throw in this one. He is a weird.
Yes.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Me and my brother were saying the exact same thing this weekend.
What is this release?
I don't know. I like Haynes King less after seeing it, though. not to say he's not a good quarterback, but
hold on. We can actually say that after this weekend. I'm starting to wonder. People are wondering. We could start to have the conversation. Are we sure Haynes King's good? I think that's okay.
We can have the conversation. I'm not 100% sure, but he beat out Max Johnson, and I think Max Johnson is a good quarterback. So, you know, we'll see. I don't think we can learn that much from a game versus Sam Houston State, but that's why you also kind of want to just see your team put up 60 points in these games, because if you don't, we just kind of worry. So 31-0, Jimbo Fisher, there's been questions about this A&M offense. He's supposed to be an offensive guy, and we're in year five or so now. Are we in year six of Jimbo Fisher? And we haven't seen an explosive offense most of these years. So we'll see. 31-0 to Sam Houston State. It's not enough to – or they just Sam Houston now. I'm looking at the box score. Bearcats with a K. I'm not sure what that's all about. That hasn't always been their mascot, has it?
It's a good question. I don't remember off the top of
my head. That doesn't look familiar.
Well, it's also new colors. They weren't black and orange, if I seem to recall.
They were definitely orange.
They were orange. But I thought it was just orange and white. Maybe they – I don't know.
I'm not sure either, but yeah, so 31-0 is fine, but I don't know. You kind of want to see your team really empty the clip on one of these cupcakes, as you might say.
He kind of reminds me of Bo Nix.
Yeah, I could see that a little bit. I don't want to rule out Max Johnson. I'm a Max Johnson guy, so I want to see him get a little more reps here. Who do they play? Who do they play week two? We still got another cupcake. We got App State next week, and then Miami comes to town. So,
A&M's got App State next week.
Yeah, at home, because SEC schools play Sun Belt teams at home, not on the road. This was almost an awful week for the ACC, like. It probably still was a bad week for the ACC, but they did win most of these games where their teams looked bad.
I do love that they're in all corners of the Southeast this evening. There are grown men angrily tweeting and yelling at friends about LSU and their blemish on the SEC season because they're the one team that's lost. After week one.
Oh, that's true. 13-1 on the weekend. I guess 14-1 if you include both of Vanderbilt's wins. But yeah, it's unfortunate.
I would just say in the Hangs King front too is that when you watch this game, here's the thing about Texas A&M that's going to be so frustrating for fans. I didn't see enough that makes me concerned whether or not they can still win the SEC West or contend for the college football playoff. The defense is there. Like, Sammy State wasn't doing anything. The defense is just top-notch, and they're going to be one of the best scoring defenses in college football this year. Like, the defense is going to keep them in games. The skill position talent out wide, this is the best wide receiver group that Jimbo's had in College Station. Like, this is an elite talent group where you see the yak stuff, and you see all you got to do. This is part of the reason that I think you're like a Max Johnson guy here. It's just... put in the quarterback who's going to put the ball in the playmaker's hands. Like, just do the bare minimum.
Exactly.
Just put it in their hands, because Aeneas Smith, Evan Stewart, you go up and down the list, just put it in their, like, they're electric. This is an electric, electric bunch. And we don't see that kind of receiver talent come out of College Station very often. If you go through it, it's like, you got to go back to the Johnny Manziel era to see the last exciting wide receiver prospect out of College Station. Just put it in their hands. Like, there is talent out wide with this group. And I think that's why it's going to be so frustrating for College Station fans this fall, is that, like, if they go this Haynes King route, I don't know, because you just have this talent out wide and this elite top three defense, I think, in college football. And I just don't know if this quarterback play is going to be enough to take advantage of it.
Hey, Mike Evans was great, but don't be selling Christian Kirk short now. He was a big time receiver prospect they produced. But
that was Johnny Manziel. That's what I'm saying.
No, Christian Kirk. That was like Trevor Knight. That's like,
was he Trevor Knight?
2017 or so, I think. Because Christian Kirk,
sure? Because he's only 25.
Christian Kirk, yeah, he's only been in the league for like 3 or 4 years, right? Like, he's still pretty young.
It wasn't Trevor Knight. No way. Hold on. I'm not 100% Johnny Manziel. Sure.
No, I would say Christian Kirk did not play with Johnny Manziel. If I had to bet, because that was Ryan Swope. He was on that Johnny Manziel team, the wide receiver. I wonder how Desmond Howard's feeling about his Texas A&M pick right now. His college football playoff. I don't know. I don't know where Desmond Howard. For those listening that did not see Desmond Howard's prediction of the Final Four, he has Texas A&M beating Pittsburgh, Michigan beating Baylor, and Texas A&M beating Michigan in the national championship. No Alabama, no Ohio State, no Georgia, no Clemson, no Oklahoma. We'll see how that works out for old Dez. Everyone's 1-0, but we'll see how that works out.
Kyle Allen was his first quarterback at AM in 2015.
What's Christian Kirk's 2015? So Trevor Knight was 2016, right?
Yeah, so right after. Because that was after the Kyler Murray, Kyle Allen debacle.
Yeah.
So he must have just missed him. So there you go. I could have sworn there was like a one-year crossover, but I guess not. Then who was the main target for Johnny Manziel?
Mike Evans was his number one.
So I guess Mike Evans was. So that was the crossover. Okay.
Yeah.
There you go. Matt Green. Next up, I want to throw this to you. Houston has to beat UTSA 17-3 in the fourth quarter to come back and beat the Roadrunners in what is a great rivalry now. San Antonio versus Houston, two extremely well-coached teams, two extremely great programs. Man, this was a lot of fun to comb through the following day, but Clayton Thune balling out in this one. Great comeback win. Houston, as the listeners know, I have going undefeated this season, so needed them to not fall on their face in week one. But what a fun game, man. What do you make of Houston Cougars coming back and beating the Roadrunners in epic fashion?
This is a big-time win. I think we knew that UTSA had the offensive firepower to keep up with Houston, so we knew they're going to have games like this all season. Like Houston, like this is going to be one of the better teams they play all year outside of probably Texas Tech next week. But I thought this was a big time win. Houston, you know, they got that Clayton Thune, that big time offense. I don't take anything away from them for needing to go to overtime to beat UTSA.
But UTSA, really good program, moving in the right direction. Houston survives, and we'll see what happens the rest of the way. One in Fayetteville. Sam Pittman survives at home. We get Mr. Bryant, the Eastern Michigan transfer under center, not the intriguing quarterback of the future there. I think his name's Prather. They go with the proven commodity there a little bit in Fayetteville on the road at Arkansas. But they hang with them throughout. I thought this was a pretty important game for Luke Fickell, and not all losses are the same. And I would argue this was the Bearcats proved a point in Fayetteville and gave Sam Pittman and the Arkansas Razorbacks all they can handle, right?
Yeah, I agree completely. I think we were both just questioning them, not necessarily because of what they have, but because of what they don't have. And they just lost so much NFL talent from that team a year ago. And there's just kind of an assumption that, you know, Cincinnati can't really be that good again this year. And I mean, this could be like the fourth or fifth year in a row that they've been really good. So Luke Fickell's, he's put together just an excellent program. And this is a win that I feel like is going to get kind of overlooked for Arkansas, but this is a really good program. Like, this isn't beating Akron, this isn't beating Kent State, Ball State at home, Utah State. Like, this is a legitimate college football playoff program, and like, this was a physical game. This is a tough game, and Arkansas, they pretty much controlled it, I would say, the whole way, but Cincinnati definitely hung with them. It was a quality win. I think KJ Jefferson showed, like, I think this is what they're going to need from him week in and week out this season.
Yeah, KJ Jefferson's like the most slept on quarterback in this conference, and I think that's just going to continue to be the case, right? It doesn't matter what he does, and Arkansas just, we've now gotten accustomed to Arkansas just doing the competent Arkansas things now, that they're just winning big games at home, winning games they're supposed to, winning games against really good competition. I don't know, Arkansas is just suddenly a solid, solid, solid program. And I think Sam Pittman deserves all the credit in the world for what he's turned around this program, because they were left for dead a couple years ago. And just what we were looking at in the Chad Morris era. But the one thing about Chad Morris, he did know he had something in KJ Jefferson, bringing him to Fayetteville. So doing wonders for a different staff, but Arkansas lives to fight another day. I'm very curious to see what they look like through the course of this season.
Without a doubt. We're 1 year removed from, obviously Texas is a more prestigious program than Cincinnati, but we're a year removed from Arkansas rushing the field to beat an unranked Texas team. Like not really a big deal in terms of a national upset, but just from who they were as a program. And now it's like you just beat a team that played in the college football playoff last year, opened the season, and it's business as usual. It's not even the top headline in college football. I think Sam Pittman is just, I mean, is he not the most beloved coach in all of college football? Like, there's not one person that can say a bad word about Sam Pittman.
Well, I think everybody just likes their coach, right? Like every Georgia fan would say, oh, it's Kirby. Like every Georgia fan just loves Kirby.
But as a Georgia fan, I am aware of how many people dislike Kirby, mainly just because Alabama fans are so loud about it. But like, there's not, for him to come from Georgia, like there's absolutely zero animosity from his previous employer. Like, maybe because he hasn't beaten Georgia in a big game or anything, that might change things. But like, if like Georgia fans just universally love Sam Pittman, and I just, so if there was going to be a fan base that didn't like him, it's like it's your previous stop, you know. Like maybe you stole a recruit or you stole a staff member or something like that. So there's nothing from Georgia to dislike him. And then just the national perspective of Sam Pittman, he's just a super likable guy, and you can't not root for Arkansas.
I would agree, Matt Green. What's sad right now? We have to talk about this, Matt Green. Does Ken, how am I going to do this? Can you pronounce his last name? Ken Namaya Tololo Niamaya Ken Naya Tamal.
Sorry, Navy?
Yes, the Navy.
Yeah, coach. We'll go with that.
I struggle with it. It doesn't matter how many times I hear it out loud, I'm going to struggle with it. So apologies to Coach Naya Tamalolo. I can't do this. And I don't know how to do it. I can't do it. I keep trying. I can't do it. Can't. Coach Ken. They lose at home. Did you see this? This went under the radar a little bit. They drop to the FCS Delaware Blue Hens, who have a new coach here in play. What the heck is going on at Navy? They have fallen off a cliff as a program. So this is a two-parter, man. This went under the radar. It's our under radar loss of the week on this segment. Delaware beating Navy on the road. Now we have to wonder, are we sure Navy doesn't fire their coach and change gears a little bit this year? Number two, Rutgers goes on the road and beats Boston College. Like, that was a crazy game too.
That was a shocker for me, for sure. Like, Boston College, I thought was a sleeper to be, you know, easily a bowl team, maybe even play some interesting games in November. Like, not necessarily win the division, but maybe compete. Losing to Rutgers, I don't know. Now I'm like that. Like, Rutgers, we always sleep on Rutgers, right? Like, maybe if there's no one that can coach Rutgers like Greg Schiano. So maybe he just knows something about finding ways to win some games. But he's obviously a proven coach. But yeah, I thought Boston College is definitely a disappointing performance over the weekend. But I didn't see much of Navy, but I did see a touchdown celebration from the Delaware Blue Hens. Did you see this?
Mm-hmm.
The salute playing against Navy, I'm not sure how to feel about it. Is that disrespectful to our armed forces here? I feel like it's a great shit talking, but I don't know if it crosses a line. How do we feel?
That's a good point. I guess you just have to ask the Navy, like naval officers, like what they thought of it. Like, I don't know. Ask the players. Ask the opposing side. I don't know.
It is a sign of respect, right?
Maybe it's just like, if you don't like it, stop it. The same thing with everything else. Like, you don't want him to do that. Like,
it's funny. It's equivalent to just like doing the gator chomp when you score against Florida or something, but it takes on an interesting angle when it's against our military.
And Coastal beats Army 38-28 to start off. 1-0, the Chanticleers, very pro Chanticleers on this podcast. I would like to unveil our WTF of the week. Let's call this our pets' heads are falling off segment of the week, Matt Green. Louisville, who I had as an ACC champion dark horse before the year, they go to Syracuse. Did you see this? Did you hear about this, Matt Green?
I did. I heard
about
it. They
get boat raced. They get embarrassed on the road. If you're a former Mississippi State or current Mississippi State quarterback, this was the weekend for you. Garrett Schrader, formerly of the Mississippi State Bulldogs, been in Syracuse for a little bit now, has a fantastic game up there in Syracuse, New York, as the Syracuse Orangemen beat the Louisville Cardinals 31-7. They shut them out in the second, third, and fourth quarter. Garrett Schrader, 18-25, 237 yards, two TDs. Remember, Syracuse benefited significantly from the retirement, the sudden retirement from Bronco Mendenhall, Matt Green. They bring in all the offensive staff from Bronco Mendenhall, who turned in Brennan Armstrong into an absolute assassin. Bryce Perkins before him, an absolute assassin at the quarterback position. Guess what? He's in the building for Syracuse now. Dino Babers, everything is on the table. He has to win this year. He's getting fired most likely. They just go out and beat the crap out of the Louisville Cardinals to open up. We got to reevaluate some stuff. The ACC is absolutely drunk. I have no freaking clue what to do with the ACC. All I'm just going to say is our pets' heads are falling off right now in the ACC, the American Athletic Conference. What are we doing? Or the Atlantic Coast Conference, excuse me. What are we doing?
My slogan, my personal slogan, I don't know if I can trademark this or what, but I have said this, I would say for probably a decade plus, that no one in the ACC, just cancel out Clemson's national championship runs. They don't count. No one in the ACC is as bad as you think they are, and no one is as good as you think they are. It just seems like this conference for like a decade plus, it's just once you think you know one of these teams, they just drop a game they shouldn't, or they just absolutely destroy someone you don't think they're going to. Syracuse, I feel like we left them for dead just about. Like, yeah, Dino Babers, yeah, I don't know when they're going to fire him, but they're going to fire him. I'm not really worried about it. So Syracuse, like, who knows? 31-7 to start the year. I think this is a statement win, without a doubt. And for Malik Cunningham, like, you know, he's had his struggles as a passer. Like, hasn't been just amazing as a passer. But you can always trust that this guy's going to put up 100 and something on the ground. They absolutely shut him down. So big-time performance for the Orange.
There you go. Matt Green, it's time for our last little thing here on the recap show, first recap show of the new season. Our stickers of the week. We love stickers on helmets. Who got your stickers of the week, sir?
We taking turns. You want me to just give you all of them?
Give me yours and then I'll give you mine.
So, I like where this is going. I gotta go Stetson Bennett of the Georgia Bulldogs first off. Then we got KJ Jefferson. I thought was an excellent performance for Arkansas. Anthony Richardson, we obviously talked about him. I thought that was an excellent win over Utah. And then the other one, a little off the beaten path, is Drake May for North Carolina. Not only this week, 24 of 35 for 352 and four touchdowns, also had 76 yards rushing and a touchdown. But now on the season, he's completing 73% of his passes, 9 touchdowns, no picks. Like, I think there's a chance that North Carolina just doesn't even miss Sam Howell, that they just pick up right where he left off from a year ago.
I like that. Drake May is going to be a player at UNC. I think they found their next star there. So that I would highly agree. For me, the Mississippi State quarterbacks, Garrett Schrader, did great work. I think he's a sneaky dark horse, like big time year. I think the Syracuse offense is legit. And I think the fact that that staff from Virginia and Bronco Mendenhall walking in the building for Syracuse is going to pay dividends. I don't think they're going 10-2 or anything, but I think Dino Babers saved his job by adding them to this staff. I think they're going to be efficient. I think they're going to be fun. 6-6, 7-5 is far more likely now for the Orangemen. So that's good for them. Good for that program who's been through a lot. Will Rogers, 38 of 49, 450 through the air, 5 TDs for the most underrated quarterback in the SEC. The Bulldogs blow out Memphis after a long delay. Bulldogs, man, Georgia fans, I'm telling you right now, even if you are not worried about Tennessee coming into Athens, I get it. I understand it. Going to Starkville, it's going to be a thing. Like Mississippi State, Georgia, I think is going to be a game. Mississippi State's old. They've got a lot of returning. They had the most returning production from a season ago. This is a good team, man. Will Rogers is as efficient as they get. Mike Leach, we know the record. Third-year quarterbacks. Will Rogers starting out of the gate hot. I don't know. I'm drinking all the Bulldog stock, the Bulldog tea, and spitting out all the Ole Miss stuff because Jackson Dart was not good in that opener. Zach Evans is going to be a player, but Ole Miss not the same team they were a year ago. Mississippi State is they're going to be a really good football team, man. This is a big year for them.
The former Mississippi State quarterback and the current Mississippi State quarterback getting stickers from you. Yep. I don't know if he's necessarily underrated because I feel like he gets a decent amount of hype. But I thought you were going to say the most underrated kind of maybe the most underrated win of the weekend in the SEC. It feels like Mississippi State beat Memphis because like they lost to this team a year ago. Like Memphis is not one of these cupcakes either. They're one of the more respectable group of five programs. So they took care of business as they need to, and you saw the offense working the way it should. So I feel like it was a quality win. Mississippi State, no, that's definitely – Georgia fans, that's one of the handful of games, even though people have questioned this schedule in 2022, that's one of the handful of games at Circle that at Starkville, whatever week of November it is, that's definitely one of the more dangerous games for Georgia.
There you go. All right, Matt Green, first recap show of the year back in the books here, man. A lot of fun talking actual football. It's been a little bit. It's been how many months now since we last were able to do this? 9 months almost since we were last talking about college football action and games that happened. glad to have that back. Don't forget, friends, you can check this out every Sunday night here on the Chase Jones Podcast, ready for you on your Monday morning commute each and every week during the college football season. Follow Matt on Twitter at Matt_Green. Follow myself at Chase_Thomas. And of course, tell a friend, family member, coworker about the full ride here on the Chase Thomas Podcast. New episodes daily here on the podcast here on BlueWirePods.com. Subscribe on YouTube and watch this episode and all of our episodes, YouTube.com/Chase Thomas Podcast. But that is all I've got. So for that guy down there in Decatur, Georgia, Matt Green, for myself up here in Knoxville, Tennessee, we'll be back with our week two preview show on Wednesday evening. So look out for that in your podcast feed. And until then, Matt Green, thank you as always.
Yes, sir.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.